From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. David Levan from the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology is interviewed by Gen's Editor-in-Chief John Sterling on designing artificial cells that could power medical implants.
Dr. David Levan is project leader of the Functional Properties Group in the Material Science and Engineering Laboratory at the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology. The group develops and disseminates measurement science, standards, and technology pertaining to the measurement of all functional properties of advanced materials and structure, including chemical, electrical, thermal, optical, and magnetic properties. Dr. Levan, it's been reported that you and your colleagues have created a blueprint for artificial cells that are more powerful and efficient than the natural cells they mimic. Can you tell us more about these artificial cells, your blueprint, and its focus on biological ion concentration gradients?
I'd be happy to. Well, let me just start by saying that this project started when I challenged a new graduate student, Jian Xu, with a simple question, which was, can we design an artificial cell that mimics natural cell function? And if we can design an artificial cell, would that outperform or underperform the natural cell? And so to address this, we decided to start by creating a numerical model of how the electrocyte cell in the electric eel produces electricity. And they do that by forming an action potential, so an electrical pulse, much the same way a neuron forms an action potential. You know, for the neuron, of course, it's just trying to relay information, and so there's not much energy in the pulse. For the electric eel, it's actually trying to deliver energy to stun its prey, and also they use the electricity for sensing. So our model included the equations for 7 ion channels and ion pumps that are distributed across 2 membranes of the cell. We included a lot of sort of smaller details, if you will, such as you had to maintain the osmotic balance by accounting for the water transport that occurs with ion transport. So these cells work by storing energy in an ion concentration gradient. You know, high ion concentration on one side of the membrane and lower ion concentration on the other side of the membrane. Then to release this energy, or say to convert that energy into something useful, the ion channels open and the ions quickly rush from high concentration to low concentration. In the natural cell, one cell can produce about 150 millivolts. And a fairly small current. And in the animal, thousands of cells are stacked both in parallel and in series, you know, which just means you'll say rows and columns, if you will, so that both the voltages and the currents add. So you end up with 600 volts and as high as an amp with the right impedance. And so power can flow through an external circuit. You know, that external circuit might be the prey if this was a real electric eel, or it would, in our case, it would be the implant you were trying to power. And the maximum power is achieved when the external impedance matches the impedance of the stack of cells. And the same is true for conventional galvanic batteries. So sort of an interesting physical question that we answered there.
Could you describe how you actually used this blueprint to create a model of an artificial cell that could replicate the electrocyte's energy production? And the electrocyte, again, is the cell in the electric eel.
Right. As I said, we started by creating a numerical model of the action potential formation in the electrocyte. And, of course, we evaluated or tested that model to make sure it accurately predicts the behavior of the natural cell. And once we felt that the model was accurate, we stepped back and said, okay, now let's try to use what we've learned in this model to design an artificial cell. And so we added another level of software that performed what's called numerical design optimization. And so in that code, that software just had a list of the available ion channels and ion pumps. The physics of the cell membrane were programmed into it. And then we also defined what's called an objective function, which is just some numerical function that defines the goodness of the design. And so in our case, we said we wanted to maximize energy density, and then later on, we actually did it again to maximize energy conversion efficiency. And so this software would run automatically. It would vary the molecular components, you know, meaning the types and numbers of ion channels and ion pumps on the two membranes, in an effort to maximize the value it got for the objective function, which was the, again, you say to maximize the energy density for the cell. And after the software would churn for a while, you know, this is, you know, high, you know, we have the luxury of very fast computers now, it would provide for us a new design. And what we were able to show was that these new designs actually had higher performance than the natural cells. What's nice about using numerical design optimization is it's completely impartial. You know, we just told it what output should be maximized, and it varied the parameters with no preconceived idea of what was good or bad. And what we saw is that one type of channel actually went to zero, meaning that that channel was unnecessary in the design. And then the other channels, the numbers of the channels were increased or decreased a little bit.
Can you provide some examples of applications for these artificial cells?
When we started the project, we were actually in contact with Mark Humayun at the University of Southern California. He was leading a project to create implantable artificial retinas. And these artificial retinas have actually been tested in humans with simple configurations. And they're concerned about how to provide sufficient power for their implants. And we thought that these, our artificial cells, would be appropriate for that. And so the initial, say, power budget, if you will, was focused on the needs of that artificial retina project. And so we showed that we would be able to power a 1,000-pixel retinal implant with an artificial cell device that was a cube about 4 millimeters on a side.
So far, Dr. Levan, this work is all done on a model system. What's your projections for actually having a device, an actual device, to provide this power that we're talking about?
Let me answer that slightly askew and say the biggest obstacle is actually getting synthetic ion pump. That there's several options for stabilizing lipid bilayers and synthetic devices and several options for synthetic ion channels. Of course, I mean, as you are aware, if we just genetically engineered the cell following the designs that we've developed, these stability questions are not an issue. However, I think we would like to look at synthetic devices as well. To move these forward, we're trying to come up with simpler designs that hopefully would reduce it down to one molecular component, and just that would be hopefully a single ion channel. First of all, that's that's the next step that we're working on in the research. And I think what we are seeing in our ongoing work is that that type of system generates electricity without forming an action potential. And it is less efficient than the system that does form an action potential, but would be far simpler to make.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.